This is Ron Oral, and you're listening to the Activist Investing Today podcast. And I'm super excited today to welcome for the first time, but hopefully not the last time, Elizabeth Gonzalez-Sussman, who recently was hired to lead Skadden's shareholder engagement and activism defense practice. This comes after nearly two decades working at top activist advisory firm Olshan Frum Wolofsky, where she was vice chair of shareholder activism. So quite a switch, but still an expert in all things activisty. At Olshan, she advised hedge funds and large investors in top insurgency situations, including at Primo Water, which was targeted by Legion Partners. Welcome, Elizabeth. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so let's start with the switch. I see this every now and then, but I'm curious why, after nearly 20 years representing activist investors, did you switch to advising companies? I know it's a very prestigious role going over to Skadden, but I'm still curious about the switch.
Yeah, I mean, look, Skadden definitely had a big impact on my decision to move because of their tremendous reputation and their roster of clients. So that had a big impact in my decision. But it also came a time mid-career thinking about what's the next phase. I love activism because it's always evolving. But switching was a new, interesting element to add to my work life. And I thought that I could really add a unique perspective that a lot of other advisors don't have and really make an impact on board relationships with the activists and how to engage in a different way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'm curious if you could give me some examples of the kind of experience you have that will help boards and management as they face activist investors. I always feel like there's a lot of unintended negative consequences for companies when they do certain things. For example, we've seen a lot of companies changing their bylaws to kind of help defend the company against activists. But, you know, these often become activist talking points. So I suspect that your perspective from working on the activist side will color how you advise companies targeted by activist investors and, you know, I guess when and when not to do certain things.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the big lesson that I can bring to the table is gamesmanship never is a winning strategy. It almost always backfires. And the other shareholders, particularly the large institutional investors, the proxy advisory firms, view it very negatively. So that's never going to be my approach with trying to play games with bylaws or some other defensive measure. Sometimes, though, you compete on substance and you may need to take actions like adopting a poison pill when there's a rapid accumulation. So everything is fair game as long as there's a reason and a rationale. The best experience I have is understanding the perspectives of the activists and sharing that with the board and management team. The one big thing that I think sometimes companies get wrong is that not all activists are the same. And there may be first-time activists with no playbook. So how do you, when you've never represented an activist, educate a board about what they may be thinking? Well, having represented many of these first-time activists, one-off activists, maybe it's the CEO who's coming back for his job again and doesn't have the typical playbook, I think I can really share a different perspective as to the motivations, what they may be thinking, how to interpret what they're asking for in a different way, what you might be able to settle for, and what's the most effective defense in light of this. So that's really like the perspective of the activist. The second thing is really how I would go about reviewing the letters and what the company's performance looks like from the activist perspective. So in preparedness, I can flag, like, this is what I would be paying attention to if I was representing the activist investor. And so we should get in front of that. So a lot of my work is going to be preparedness work. And I think that's going to be the most valuable, is this is what I would focus on if I was asked to look at the governance, to look at the profile and figure out how vulnerable a company is.
Okay, so like a big part of what you'll be doing, Elizabeth, is advising companies that aren't currently in a peacetime situation where there's no current activist, but you're kind of advising company how to prepare the company for a potential activist campaign.
Absolutely. And I think I can do that really effectively, right? Because on the activist side, we would look at companies and assess their vulnerability from a governance perspective, board composition. Obviously, there's always performance, but how favorable and easy will it be for this activist to come in and be successful? I can share that with the board up front to target and narrow in on exactly what I would be looking at from the other side.
And I'm sure that your experience with specific activists and knowing that, you know, their particular strategies will come in extremely helpful. I know that whenever I write an article about an activist, I look at their track record extensively. And there was this one situation that I was writing about the last couple of weeks where the PR people from the activist fest were trying to convince me, oh, you know, we don't know if the activists will nominate a change of control slate or, you know, maybe they'll do a minority slate. And I looked at this activist track record and each time it's a change of control slate with a management change effort in there. So I was, you know, if they decided to do a minority slate, it would be out of their character. And of course, lo and behold, they did the change of control slate. So anyways, putting that aside, I wanted to talk a little bit about one of the things I'm seeing a lot in settlements with activists and definitely a lot with demands from activists. And I actually wrote up a story, a big settlement this week where the activists, so basically how activists are pushing companies to set up M&A, strategic advisory, other types of subcommittees of the board, the finance committees, but often these finance committees are focused on strategic and operational changes that the activists want. And I wrote one up where the activists got their outside candidate installed as the chairman of a finance committee. So I know that from the point of view of the activists, I suspect this is something that when you were back working at Olshan, advising activists who are requesting that. But from the point of view of a company, I'm curious, how would you respond to an activist that's looking to set up a subcommittee, wanting to put its outside candidates on the subcommittee, maybe an inside candidate, a portfolio manager on the subcommittee? How would you view that?
Well, I think the scope of the committees and what the activist is asking for is going to be really relevant here. If they're looking for a committee that may be narrowly focused on cutting costs or capital allocation, maybe it's appropriate to give them a committee and create a committee and put one of their directors on. But when it's more fundamental than that, you know, the focus on is a strategic review or it's a backdoor into trying to do a strategic review, I think boards really need to be careful because boards should not be delegating those decisions and the analysis that goes into a major fundamental decision to a subcommittee of directors where the activists or their nominees is having an outside voice. I think that's where things can get a little too slippery of a slope. I think that we need to think about what type of committee is being formed before a board just commits to one and also make sure that the scope doesn't become an ever expanding scope. Because again, all board members should be making these types of fundamental decisions as opposed to a subcommittee that really is driving all the decisions and then presenting it and then shoving it down the rest of the director's throat. Fundamental decisions belong at the full board level and it should stay that way.
And it sounds like if you were to accept an activist candidate to put on a subcommittee, it would be preferable to be a outside candidate submitted by the activist, which is what we typically see. Yeah. So just broadly speaking, though, how would you view activist efforts to put, you know, one of their portfolio managers on the board or the subcommittee? And I feel like we're seeing less of activists. Well, I don't know. You tell me, Elizabeth, you're closer to the ground on this than I am. I feel like we're seeing less of activists trying to put their own internal candidates, people that work at their hedge funds on boards, and more them trying to get their external candidates. And I feel like this may be associated with the idea that we're seeing more activists succeed at finding well-qualified outside candidates to nominate to the board. So I don't know. I guess that's a two-part question. How would you view an activist's effort to put a portfolio manager on a board or subcommittee? And two, are you seeing less of this? And do you think that that's because we're seeing better activist candidates?
Yeah. I mean, look, the activist candidates pool has definitely improved dramatically over the years that I've been doing this. And that's in part because there isn't the stigma that if you serve on the activist slate, it's going to damage your professional director career. And so I think that that's part of why I think activists are not putting themselves up. But the other part is flexibility in trading, right? Why be hamstrung if you don't need to? And you found these really highly qualified candidates that can really add value. I think where you're really seeing the push for an activist to go on is going to be more of almost like a control fight, or you really want to make a statement that like the CEO should go. And the only way to do that is for you to be in the room to change people's mind. I mean, that's the activist then pushing to go on the board. I think companies, though, need to be mindful of like, all right, not all activists are the same. Not all portfolio managers are the same. And so if this board thinks that portfolio manager can be value added because they have a history of serving on boards and demonstrating that value creation actually occurred, mm-hmm. then I think the companies and boards should consider it. It's not always a bad thing, right? But where there's not a track record like that, I think companies and boards really need to think about what is the value add here? Just because they own some shares, they're the best drivers of building value? Not necessarily. I think what you really want is like an industry expert or somebody with the skill sets that this activist is saying is needed than just somebody who owns some shares. And that, I think, is where there's this divide. It's like, look, are they going to be value added or not? Do they have the track record or not? And that, I think, is where boards start saying, well, let's get the independent director with the actual skill set, as opposed to the only thing that the activist brings is ownership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of wonder whether the outside candidates always try to look at who those outside candidates are. Have they served on other activist slates in the past? Sometimes I find that they've served on several activist slates and been installed on several boards over 10 years in the activist settlements. I always wonder, are they kind of a Trojan horse or, you know, an independent director focused on the company's future that just happened to be found by the activist investor? But
it's something the board has to really carefully evaluate as to, why are we adding this? Just for peace, or because they're really going to be a value add?
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about incumbent companies and their boards. And this goes back to your initial comments where you also advise companies in peacetime before they're targeted by activists. And I suspect that there's a lot of companies out there that have red flags associated with their boards. And we look for those at the deal. We have our watch list and our crosshairs list of companies we think could be targeted by activists. And there's a lot of factors we look into that. And one of which is we look at the existing incumbent directors and whether they are vulnerable. Yeah. And there's a number of things that we look for. Are those directors over tenured? Have they been there for a very long time? Maybe they're too cozy with the CEO. Are they overboarded? Are they on too many other boards? And I know that there's kind of ISS and Glass-Lewis guidelines for this. But if you're on five boards of major companies, I feel like you're too busy potentially. And then the age. I mean, sometimes an over tenured director is over 80 years old and doesn't have the skill set. Oh, yeah. And that's the other thing. It's amazing how many companies I find with directors. They seem to be highly qualified directors, but there's nobody with experience other than the inside directors, like the CEO on the board. Nobody with experience in the industry of the company they're overseeing. And that's got to be a red flag. So I don't know. What do you advise, Elizabeth, companies? And do you see companies with boards that need to be refreshed?
Yes. I mean, look, that is a big part of my practice here at Skadden. When we call it board preparedness, it's not preparedness to fight against the activists. It's preparedness. Like, are you doing all the things you should be doing? Be your own activist, right? And that includes assessing board composition and overall governance. There's always going to be the assessment of performance. Are you underperforming? Are you undertaking all the initiatives you should to address the drivers of underperformance? Of course. But on the governance side, these are the types of things that I think I can help with, because those are the things that will be focused on in any activist situation if you're underperforming. Tenure, I think we have now sort of settled. Market is anything over 9 years will be considered over tenure, unless there's really a mix and match. If there's only one person that's over 9 years on this board and the rest, there's been regular refreshment, then a mix and match of years and experience would be okay. You start to think about, though, are there multiple directors that have been serving on this board for 10 plus years? Do we have the right skill set? To your point, industry experience, yeah. In the years that I've been doing this, that is often an issue, that the board doesn't have enough industry experience. And a lot of that can just be like, well, the company used to be very diverse. Now it's simplifying in structure. And yet it still has these directors that had relevant experience for something that's been spun off or sold. And the board constantly needs to think about, what are the skill sets for the board today? And sometimes you have to have that hard conversation that not everyone needs to be renominated each year in order to make sure that we have the right composition. So this is something that I'm always advising on and will continue to, because that's a vulnerability that boards don't really need to have. It's part of the overall package, though, of really addressing overall performance and drivers of underperformance and making sure that these new perspectives get into the boardroom to address a driver of underperformance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely something that we'll continue to keep an eye on here at The Deal. So, okay, so I have time for just one more question. And in full disclosure, this is relates to kind of a feature I've been working on for The Deal. But it's an area that's kind of cropped up periodically over the years, but I just feel like there's been a critical mass of activists employing this strategy recently, or at least public disclosure of activists employing the strategy. I suspect there might be some behind the scenes. Maybe, Elizabeth, you know some of the behind the scenes aspects of the strategy. But basically, activists working with former executives of targeted companies as part of their campaigns. And, you know, former CFOs, CEOs partnering with the activist, I suspect, can maybe give them more leverage in their campaigns. I mean, I guess it depends on whether the CEO, CFO left on good terms, you know, how the company's employees maybe feel about the former CEO, CFO. But really, it's kind of a partnering with the, you know, the former CEO, CFO, giving the activist kind of information, not, you know, insider trading type confidential information, but kind of broader view of long-term, maybe mismanagement or bad strategic decision-making at the company over the years, or just some sort of advice. I feel like we're seeing this, and it's a partnership that I feel like it kind of helps the activists, you know, in negotiations with the company, maybe institutional investors, proxy advisors. So I don't know. Have you seen this, Elizabeth, the activists partnering with former executives of targeted companies? I know they work with former executives of other companies. We see that a lot too, but just former executives of targeted companies. You know, this guy used to work at the company. And is that like a strategy that can help an activist?
It can help if the situation, like you said, was, look, this was a great CEO and the performance boomed under him or her. And so, yeah, they were managing the company perhaps better. And so that gives some credibility, right, to the activist argument. But I think companies and shareholders also need to focus on this important point, which is, how long ago were these CEO, CFOs in the room, right? Because companies evolve and there's micro and macro conditions that can really impact performance that they may not have ever dealt with. So sometimes I think we all have to be a little wary if the CEO is coming out of the woodwork that managed the company 10 years ago. And try to understand whether they still have relevant expertise to warrant coming back at the helm or to have a board seat. Because I think, look, it's great and fine to have that industry experience, but it has to be relevant. It has to be recent. And that's the one thing where I think this strategy could backfire. I'm not going to lie, though, it can help when it is under the right circumstances, where they truly had great performance. Things have not dramatically changed at the company, and they have the best insight as to what could be done differently, what may have changed in strategy that they can address more easily. But again, we have to really be looking at how long ago they were at the helm and how different a company circumstance looks today before really figuring out if it adds value or not.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting approach that I've seen activists use. But yeah, you're right. I have to go back and look at exactly when were their tenure. I mean, if they left too recently, then they have, you know, material non-public information, and probably the activist doesn't want to take that information because then that would kind of limit them on trading.
It's a dangerous slope, right? And also not everyone reads their agreements when they exited, and you can have this seriously backfire, right? So.
Oh, right. You know, those severance agreements have like prohibitions.
Yeah. So the activists have to be careful and really do their due diligence, because otherwise it can really take all the wind out of the sails.
Yeah. Okay. That's fascinating. Elizabeth, thank you for your thoughts. We are out of time. You've been listening to the Activist Investing Today podcast, and we've been speaking to Elizabeth Gonzalez-Sussman, the recently installed chief of SCADA's Shareholder Engagement and Activism Defense Practice. Congratulations once again, Elizabeth, and thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.